All right, well, good morning. I've actually presented the preliminary results from developing the digital Hillsong position a few years back, but I've never got around to actually presenting the final product. So that's kind of my main motivation, but I also want to wrap that in the argument that quantifying Hillsong position and particularly applying this model could really help our pedologic research as we consider topo sequences. So I'll start off with basically explaining why should we quantify Hillsong position. I'll spend most of my time just really briefly going through the process I used to create this quantified definition, and then briefly mention some next steps. To make my case that we need to quantify Hillsong position, I pulled some descriptions of Hillsong position from several research studies where you have a topo sequence. As you see here, a lot of times we'll describe qualitatively summit, backslope. You'll see those terms, and that's defining where the sample is taken. But we know there's going to be some variability between researchers about where they considered those different positions to be. So if you were to go back to those same hill slopes, could you identify the same place where that study had taken that sample? Also, a lot of times in these studies, they'll label their samples summit, shoulder, backslope, foot slope, but really they are just going certain distances from the hilltop. So maybe functionally there isn't really a foot slope, it's not really concave at the base, but they felt this necessity to get all five samples in across the hill slope. So really it may be more about distance and kind of equal spacing, more of just a transect, as opposed to truly identifying unique process zones along that hill slope. And that's what I'm really arguing today, is that we need to identify process zones because we're often dealing with complex hill slopes. All right, so really, to answer the question of why quantify hill slope position, it's about comparability. If we go from one hill slope to the next, are we truly comparing similar environments? Because the whole idea of topo sequence is that we're controlling all the variables, except for one, just one variant. So what do we have for defining hill slope position? Largely, we have diagrams. So we have the standardization where we look at a diagram, but that only tells us so much. It's a visualization, but really we know this from field experience. We have soil judging teams where we train them. This is your summit. This is your backslope. And our soil surveyors, as they go out in the field, they start getting a sense for how do they identify these things in the field so that they can associate those with patterns in the landscape or soil properties. So for my study, I went back to soil survey office where they've been keeping good records. It's common practice to have a field note card where they record their field observations. And there's a certain section here where they have labeled, they're actually in the field, they identify that particular location as toe slope, where they have TS here. And all of these were geo-referenced using a GPS unit in the field. So I have point data where the field scientist said, this is what this place should be classified as. So the model calibration really is three steps: an analysis scale, which I'll talk about a little more in depth because it is probably the most unique thing to this work. Classification breaks, we've got to figure out how steep do we go before we switch over to a different category. And then the different decision tree structures, because there's a few different possibilities there. For the calibration, I have about 262 points. Each of those kind of green clusters that you see in the overall county map there are really cross transects crossing several hill slope positions. So let me describe just real briefly what I mean by analysis scale. If you're in the field, you look across the landscape. If you measure slope across a short distance, that answer is going to be a little bit different than if you're looking across a longer distance. So we don't often talk about this in very quantitative terms, but in our field training, we kind of learn how far do you look across the hill slope to determine what is that slope gradient. In terms of GIS, this is really a function of our grid cell resolution and the neighborhood used to make that calculation. So if I have a 3-meter grid cell resolution, and I look at the typical 3x3 window to calculate slope, in this case, I actually have a 9-meter analysis scale. But if I expand that neighborhood, keeping the resolution the same, but just consider more cells in the calculation of slope gradient, then I now have an analysis scale of 15 meters. And if I expand that out, then I have an analysis scale of 21 meters. So the three variables that I'll be considering for hill superposition, relative elevation, slope gradient, and profile curvature, are all very scale dependent. So it matters what distance across the landscape we are measuring these things. And a lot of times we think about in digital soil mapping, you'll see the argument made that it really matters what your resolution of the grid that they're using as an input variable to find correlations. And that's kind of true, but I'm going to make the argument here that it's not so much the grid cell resolution, but the analysis scale. So that's why I have three different tables here. Each of these is the same experiment conducted first with a 3-meter resolution grid cell, and then a 9-meter grid cell, and then a 27-meter size grid cell. And then going across the columns, we have increasing analysis scale. So the 15 by 15 is 15 cells by 15 cells to give us a 45-meter analysis scale. And this is kind of a trial and error. We go across the gradient, and we look for where is that peak correlation. And we'll find that correlation, or our best matching relative elevation to what the soil scientist was judging as relatively high or relatively low in the landscape, not mattering so much by the grid cell, but by the analysis scale. Notice that our peak is all at 135 meters here. So I did the same thing for profile curvature. I found the strongest signal there at 63 meters. When you have too large of a grid cell size, you may have to bump up and do the closest you can as possible. So 63 meters wasn't possible on a 27-meter grid cell size, but 81-meter had the strongest signal for being able to predict what the soil scientists would interpret in the field. Soil gradient's very similar, but instead of doing percent agreement, we actually had the soil scientists quantitatively said what they thought the soil gradient was, so we went for the minimum mean difference. And in this case, basically, as small as we can make that analysis scale on the GIS in this grid type of environment, the more we can match what the field scientist was describing in the field. All right, so for the classification breaks, I use the approach very similar to fuzzy logic, where we have membership functions. So each of the points are categorized by what the soil scientist described as hill slope position. We can use the mean of that particular group to find the kind of central concept of that particular grouping. Also experiment with using the median instead of the mean. For both of those cases, took the mean of the central concepts to find the middle point between those to find what should be that classification break for which way should the classification go. Also experimented a little bit with using standard deviation to kind of widen or shorten the shape of that membership function. So I actually put forward several models that were possibilities and then really said, okay, which one actually has the best validation? The first validation was in the same Ottawa County, Michigan, as the original calibration was done, so same landscape, but then also tested in two really very different landscapes. All three of these test areas are glacial landscapes, but in Ottawa County, we're dealing with a very sandy landscape. Cedar County is a mixture of pre-Illinois and till, as well as some less caps, so parameters are a little bit different, shape of the landscape's different. Dickinson County is a very young, a very hummocky landscape with a clay loam parent material. So these are really different landscapes, maybe not on the global scale, but definitely not the same. And the model that performed the best actually performed pretty much equally well across all three of these landscapes. So this is the final result of the best performing model. What I really like about it is that the process of finding the numbers, finding the best model structure, that this wasn't kind of controlled by thinking about process. This is just about how do we best predict and match what the soil scientists do in the field. But we look at this, we really kind of, in a way, kind of makes sense. So you think about slope gradient. We know there's kind of a certain threshold where there's enough momentum for real activity to begin and actually be able to get some good surface flow across. So we have the very steepest slopes being classified off to back slope. If there's kind of a medium slope, we know this is kind of a transition zone for where water starting to develop that momentum. So, and then this question of, is it convex where it's building up momentum, or is it concave where it's reducing momentum? Similarly, relative elevation, it matters if it's flat, but it matters if it's on the top or on the bottom. So I just want to give you some kind of examples of how this looks in the landscape. So we have all this LIDAR data that's becoming available. We have tons of information, but we need to sort through it. So we can use the LIDAR data, classify it with this hill slope position, and we get a more simplified picture of the landscape. So we still have that background information, but this can help us identify some different process zones in the landscape, and we can sample these in a quantified, methodical way. So this is Iowa, that's Cedar County there. This landscape in Texas, more bedrock controlled. And this is a great example of two things. One, it's because it's a bedrock controlled landscape, we have complex hill slopes. So there's kind of multiple going back and forth between foot slope, back slope. And the LIDAR itself actually has some artifacts in it. You can kind of see an extra gridded pattern in there that is probably not really useful for us thinking about topology's influence on pedogenesis. We applied the hill slope position model. It kind of ignores some of the noise, but now we have a very clear way of classifying the landscape and seeing areas where we think the where surface processes should be behaving very similarly. Similarly, in Louisiana, where we have very flat landscapes, I can see from these soil survey lines, it can be a little bit difficult to figure out where we should place those for different process zones. So maybe in some places, we don't classify all five hill slope positions. Maybe it's useful to actually, just by process zones, maybe there's really just things, areas functioning as summits and toe slopes. So essentially what I've done here is combine field knowledge with digital terrain analysis to make a quantitative definition. The benefit is we have repeatability. The future possibilities is that when you think about transferability, does this model need adjusted for different paramaterials or landscapes? So I want to invite you to test this in your own research. Does this work in other parts of the United States? While we're talking about this comparability, I'm going to put a quick plug in for a poster I'll have tomorrow, asking the question, what is colluvium? Really, in contrast to alluvium, we'll have different definitions, and we need to make sure that in our research papers, different researchers are using the same definitions, and so we'll kind of test how well those match up. Kind of a different poster. It's more about me wanting you to tell me more than I'm trying to tell you. So please stop by and take that survey. With that, I'll open up for questions.
Okay, we have a couple of minutes for questions, so anybody out there?
That was the cutoff to back slope. So actually the slopes went up all the way to, well, using the gridded LIDAR, we can actually have very small sections that were up to 60%. But that's maybe not what someone would actually classify as 60%. But, you know, if you have a stream embankment, you can actually calculate that in a grid.
Right. So I guess the follow-up question is the spatial resolution, the scale, what do you call it?
Analysis scale. I think that's a really good question we need to go after. My sense is that there's something physical about if you have enough slope, the water has enough energy momentum, and you get a certain threshold for erosional processes. That probably has an interaction with the paramaterial and particle size, but I think there's probably some universality if you have the same particle size, no matter how steep you are, there's kind of a threshold where the water has enough momentum to move those particles. So really what we're talking about is that the shoulder and the foot slope are transition zones, and then there's a certain threshold above which the water is less interested in infiltrating, and it's got momentum to really affect the shape of the surface after that.
Okay, thank you very much.